Welcome to Varsity. I'm Scott Wright of The Oklahoman, joined by Jacob Unruh. It is the week three News OK Varsity podcast. High school football is alive and well. Big week in week two. It wore me out so bad I had to go to the doctor on Monday.
That's a rough week, yeah, man. What happens when you cover a double overtime game, right?
That's right.
I had one, so I'm healthy.
And I did a triple header this weekend too. It was a lot of fun. Had the Soul Bowl on Saturday as well. So after a Thursday night game, so it was a blast. But as you mentioned, a double overtime game on Friday night, and before I even get into that, let's get into to our opening segment, the game you wish you saw.
let's
talk about it.
Jake, I kind of want to be stingy and take your game.
Go for it, man.
I mean, that's one heck of a game there, with Westmore upsetting Southmore in double overtime. Braxton Borfin just playing out of his mind right now, and I mean, Westmore in general, I think, playing out of their mind. I don't think anyone saw this coming to upset Westmore or Southmore with the amount of talent, with Casey Thompson and Javarius Owens and Quindon Lewis and Bray Walker. And I mean, the list goes on and on there.
Exactly.
That one. And then I think obviously the Choctaw game upsetting Sand Springs is there on my list
looked,
too.
That looked like a pretty exciting ball game. It had the late touchdown to turn that one. Westmore was a really fun game to watch. It was really interesting because, Southmore kind of took control early, and you felt like they were really kind of in control the whole game, but they never could put them away. They had some red zone opportunities late that they weren't able to capitalize on, some different things. And then you got into overtime, and you felt like Southmore was pressing a little bit. They were having a little bit of trouble throwing the ball. Casey Thompson had a great day throwing the ball, threw for almost 300 yards, but only completed one of his last eight passes, and that was a short gain in overtime. So, and like I said, Braxton Borfin made a great read on that run in double overtime to get in the end zone. Westmore had to block a field goal attempt in the first overtime to stay alive after Southmore held them on the opening possession, and then they went backwards a little bit actually because of penalties and tried a field goal, and Westmore was able to block it just to stay alive. And I think that really gave them some momentum. You get a defensive stop, then you turn around and get another defensive stop in the second overtime, and it really felt like Westmore was going to win it at that point, whether it was going to be a field goal or a touchdown, which it ended up being. Now, I'm going to throw this out because this was heavily debated in the press box. High school overtime, you get the ball at the 10-yard line to start your possession.
Untimed, four downs.
Exactly. Now, if you are the head coach, your team goes out on defense first.
Mm-hmm.
You get a stop, no points. All you need is a field goal to win. And you trust your kicker to make a 27-yard field goal. How soon do you send him out? Because I'm sending him out on first down. If I've got a guy who can make a 27-yarder, I'm sending him out
why
on
not?
First down.
If you
I'm
know
not
you have a
around.
Guy that can do it,
I mean, absolutely.
Why not? You points don't matter in non-district.
Exactly.
I mean, you just need the 3 points.
And
just,
overtime, you don't get
exactly.
You don't get the bonus points anyway. So, that's what I was thinking. It always surprised me to see teams that want to go out there and try to mess around.
But here's the other thing about this game that stands out to me too. Isn't Southmore built to be an overtime team?
Oh, absolutely.
10 yards. You need 10 yards with Casey Thompson and
absolutely.
All the weapons around him.
Yeah,
that should be a piece of cake for that team, right?
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing that was interesting to see, because Westmore was definitely focused on taking away the pass. I mean, they had guys back there everywhere. Every pass that he had to throw in overtime was basically to a guy who was double covered. But they couldn't get guys open. They had a couple of drops. They had some stuff that went against them. So it had to be a pretty frustrating experience for that offense to be there 10 yards away from victory and not be able to finish it off. But people have asked me since, what's up with Southmore? Why, what's the problem? Now, I think that their offensive line is still coming along a little bit. I think they're not as progressed as the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm.
The defensive line struggled against Westmore. I don't know how Westmore compares to some other teams with what they do. I mean, they were able to get the power run game going a little bit. They've got three running backs who are all different styles and all pretty good. And they were able to open some holes, even with some injuries on the offensive line. Westmore was still able to open some holes, so it was really interesting. All right, we'll take a break from our Westmore Southmore chat to actually be joined by Coach Lorenzo Williams of Westmore. Coach, thank you for coming on with us, man.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Hey, how big emotionally was that double overtime victory in a rivalry game? Obviously, you guys have bigger goals than just being the Moore City champs. But I'm guessing that's got to be a good boost in the locker room for you guys.
Yeah, I think it was a good boost in the locker room. I think the guys they had a plan. You know what I mean? We put together a good game plan on both sides of the ball. Offensive staff and defense staff did a good job of game planning. And I think maybe a little shaky early, but in the second, coming into the end of the second quarter and the second half, guys came back with some fire, and they kind of understood that they're supposed to be here, and we can go out here and compete with sophomores. So, in the second half of the game, it looked a lot different. I was very proud of my guys, the way they competed, battled back, and stayed positive through the whole game. Leadership really stepped up. So, I was just kind of like a big fan on the sidelines, just watching it all go down. But it was fun though.
Hey, did you ever get worried that some of the guys were gonna kind of not necessarily give up, but get down a little bit whenever you guys got down by two touchdowns, thinking, okay, we're not supposed to beat these guys, so this is how it's gonna go tonight?
No, I didn't worry about that because when we were getting down, we got down early. It was a lot of stuff that, obviously, sophomores got some great players. Coach Starks does a great job with his team. But it was a lot of stuff in the first half it was like a tendency of guys are trying to do too much. Instead of just doing their job, they're trying to do three other people's jobs at the same time. You know what I mean? So I knew if we just settled down and they understood if we just settled down that we could have a chance to come back and, it takes some guts to come back down by 14, you know what I mean? But, they showed every bit of what they needed. Those goal line stops was huge with defense part. And then, offensively, just we ran a trick play and then we ran the ball down the field and scored and did a good job with that, getting it back 21-21. And Casey made a big play on a scramble. And it's kind of, one of those deals where once we get back 21-21, now everybody sees that the plan works. So let's just stick to the plan and go after and see if we can win the football game.
Hey, I haven't seen you guys yet this season, but one thing that stands out is the way Braxton's playing. What have you seen from him in these 2 weeks to really kind of take over this team as the team leader?
Well, he's comfortable. You know what I mean? I think that in a situation like this, when you got a new coach coming in, you don't really know how he's going to react to certain things. And when I first met with him, I sat down and said, hey, man, listen, this is your team. We're going to go as far as you take us, big fella. So if you go out there and you throw an interception, when you come to the sideline, I'm going to ask you what you saw. And whatever the decision you made at the time was probably a good decision. Now, when we get to the field room, that might be a little bit different. But when we out there on the field, I'm going to remain positive, and I want you to be positive and make sure you lead the guy. So I think when we scrimmaged Owosso in the half game, and he threw a pick and ran to the sideline, he just looked at me for a second to see if I was going to go off on him or not. I was like, what'd you see? So I think then he kind of realized that, he's got 100% support from the sideline. And we trust him with a lot because he can do a lot. His mind works at a different level. Very smart kid. He can process things fast. He can come tell us what he sees, and it's usually good information for us. So he knows that we trust his opinion, and he's involved in the game plan. And so when he goes out there, he's completely comfortable. He's ready to make plays for us.
Now, more importantly, as you got to know this kid, and I'm asking that jokingly, because how long did it take you to figure out how to pronounce his last name? Because I was doing it wrong for a year.
I just learned that. I just learned like a day ago.
Right. I had to ask him on Friday to learn it for sure.
In football, man, it's a thing that you got. It's a really good deal for about nicknames. You try to get one syllable name
there you go.
As fast as you can. You know what I mean? So he was Borf to me for the longest time because I didn't know how to pronounce it.
Borf. All right, that's good.
Pronouncing it was hard, but spelling it was even worse. So I'm not the greatest speller in the world either. So that was kind of tough for me, man.
Welcome to our world on spelling.
Right. Okay. Right. Now you've taken me down a side road here. Did you as a player have a nickname other than just Zoe? I'm guessing that was probably the easy one for people. But did you have another nickname at all as a player?
No, that Zoe is what everybody's been calling me since I was 4 years old. So I didn't even know my full. I didn't know my first name for a long time because I was Zoe or Lowe Bill or Renzo or something. Some kind of portion of my name was jacked up to make it a quick one syllable name. So my uncle started that, but I've been Zoe for the longest time, so it's been good.
Is there any other nicknames on this team that we need to know besides Borf?
I don't know. Like, I mean, if you take everybody's name, like, anybody's got two syllables, that's too long. I mean, so we need to get it down to something that we can scream and you can hear us quickly.
Hey, Garrett King is a guy that needs a nickname. That dude runs like a guy that needs a nickname, a big 230-pound running back. So we have to work on something there. But
the kids just call him GK. So
GK, that works.
That works too. Yeah.
back to some actual football after the nickname conversation. You guys actually have 2 weeks before you get into district play. You go on the road twice though. First time to go on the road this week. So or at least outside of Moore Stadium, you were technically the visitor against Moore in the Moore War. But do you go into preparations differently? Both a first road game of the year and a Thursday game.
No, I think the Thursday game thing, and I've said this before, is that I listened to Bill Walsh and trying to be a good football coach, you got to have contingencies for everything. So I looked at the schedule before the season started and kind of had an idea what I wanted to do on both of these weeks. This one, and we play Memorial on Thursday, the week after the next two. So knowing if it was just one, it probably was just kind of like I wouldn't have probably worried about it. But having two Thursday games, I felt like I had to make sure I had a plan in place and ready to go for this week. So it's basically to the kids, it seems like business as usual. And that's what I wanted to be, to eliminate as many distractions as I can and help them to be focused and prepared for the game against Evan North this week.
Obviously it's the schedule and you can't do anything about it at this point, but do you like having four non-district games before you get to games that can actually count towards your playoff record?
Yeah, I don't mind playing games. I mean, we want to play. I think we need to probably do a better job scheduling and not put the number one team in 6A2 on our schedule.
Right.
As long as the number one team in 6A1 and nothing. I mean, it was before my time, so I don't have any control over it. All I can do is coach it. But I mean, when I seen that, I the first time I seen the schedule, I was like, oh yeah, well that'd be pretty good. And then as I started thinking about it, I was like, man, I've been keeping up with Oklahoma football since I've been gone, and I feel like Bixby's won a couple state championships. When was that? Oh, last 2 years.
Right.
And we got to go up there.
You're going on the road too.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. It's like I said, we trying to just be 1-0 at the end of this week, man, and take care of Evan North first. And you know, and that's going to be a tough task for us. They kind of feel like they got a little screwed out of the game last week, which I 100% understand. I'd probably be just as mad as they are, but they got some talented players. They got a lot of speed. I think they got the fastest kid in the state playing receiver and corner and kickoff return and stuff like that. So we got our work cut out for us, not only because it's a short week, but because those guys are mad and they're ready to play football again. So hopefully they don't take it out on us.
and that comment about their DB Brock Appiah is that's no joke.
No.
When a dude commits to OU to run track, I mean he's got some serious speed. So
yeah. it's when you turn the film on and you see a guy, you're like, okay, well, that dude looks pretty dang fast. So you start asking about him. And then we got two track kids on our team that's like, hey, yeah, coach, he killed us. Well, I thought y'all was the fastest guys around. What happened?
Right, yeah.
Another guy that's faster than us, so we got to worry about this guy. This is a real situation. So, like I said, hopefully we can keep him contained and maybe try to put some points up on him. You know, he got a pretty good linebacker, too, number 44, and he makes a lot of tackles for him. So, we'll try to get down and see if we can make some things happen.
All right. Good stuff, Coach. We won't keep you any longer, but we really appreciate you taking some time. We'll be out there on Thursday at Wantland Stadium. See you guys taking on Edmond North, and good luck the rest of the way. All right, Coach?
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
The game I wish I had seen was the one I really wanted to see this week anyway, which was Jinx Union.
Oh, well, yeah.
How phenomenal would that have been? I mean, that rivalry is so intense and so fun anyway. You hardly ever see a bad game in that rivalry, but so many people thought Union was going to win that game. Me
and
included.
It looked like it early.
Right.
14
exactly.
to nothing real right off the bat.
They take control right away. And it looks like it was going to be it might even get ugly. And and Jinx hangs around and all of a sudden they're in control and then Union drives down inside the 30 at least. I don't know exactly how far they got, but for the last touchdown try there with I think 7 seconds left when they snapped the ball for the last play. So I still expect that we'll see that game again for a state title.
I like the odds of that. Really do.
Yeah. So we'll get another chance to check that one out. But that would be the top of the list for the games that I wish I had seen. There were a lot of good ones this week though. I wish the level of competition maintained this way, you know, throughout the season. But obviously, once you get into district play, you don't have the control over who you're playing. There's going to be some cluckers
some
out
really
there.
Really bad ones. You mentioned the struggle Southmore had in overtime. I had to mention Tulsa Kelly almost tied that game on McGinnis that I was at.
Really?
You know, they scored
on
third down, but there was a holding.
Yeah.
And took it back. And then they couldn't get in the end zone from there.
Then that was it.
So even at 10 yards, I guess, it's not easy for any team to score. But
like,
that's my point with Southmore, though, is that they're not just any team with an offense like that. You
exactly.
You would think that they're built for that. So
exactly, yeah. So it was, it was an interesting week. The other game I wish I had seen is the final 9 minutes and 24 seconds of Edlam.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people wish they would have seen that.
Right. I say that jokingly. Lightning comes in, you got to stop the game. It is what it is. But it was I was curious to see how this was going to play out, because it obviously was – there were two very differing opinions from the two schools about whether the game should be counted as a game. To update, it was stopped with 9:24 left. Edmund Memorial up by four, and it was highly debated whether it should count as a win for Memorial or as a no contest, and so it was kind of interesting. As far as our records are concerned, it's an Edmund Memorial victory.
Yeah, so it's it was kind of a mess talking with both sides this weekend, and talking with Mike Nunley. Nunley was in a no win situation.
Oh, absolutely,
being the athletic director for the entire school system. You know, he did what he could. He tried to get officials. And someone asked me, said, you know, well, I knew some police officers that could come for free for security. Well, a handful of police officers wasn't what they needed. They needed 22.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and they couldn't get the stadium workers back because they all had Saturday commitments, like most of them would.
Right.
They're volunteers, and
exactly. They
have commitments on Saturdays. A lot of them had tickets to games in Norman or Stillwater. And,
right.
You know, you couldn't get them back. You couldn't get the officials back. And if you're Nunley, where do you find officials at 10 o'clock at night in a rain delay? How do you find officials for Saturday that isn't the crew you already have?
Right, exactly.
You know, everyone's already officiating at that point. You
can't
even hold anybody.
Because, I mean, a lot of these guys that call high school games are calling small college games on Saturday.
Exactly,
they're all – and they're maybe even traveling, you know, to Kansas or somewhere else to go call a game, because there aren't, obviously, as many small college games as they are high school games on Saturday. So, once a game gets rained out on Friday night, it's almost impossible. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised that there were some out there like Putnam City and El Reno that were able to come back. It's more surprising to me to see somebody that is able to come back.
In a non-district game, too.
Right, exactly. Because it has no bearing on anything. Mm-hmm. And to come back was a little bit surprising.
And that's what I find interesting about this. This determines a city championship. So this means a little bit more than just a non-district game to these players, to these coaches. And, you know, I hate it that they can't come to a resolution that they agree on necessarily. Or get to play the final part of it. You know, I wish that maybe they would have moved the game up to 6 o'clock like a lot of other schools did. But it is what it is, and they got to move forward. You know, Edmund North plays Thursday against Westmore.
Right,
which should be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and Memorial hosts Deer Creek, and they're both at Wantland Stadium,
right?
Because they want to confuse everyone this year and play at both stadiums, and make me really pay attention to who's playing where. So they've got two interesting matchups. You know, because Deer Creek, I think, improved last week against Santa Fe than what they did against Southmore, and so I think they'll keep improving under Jay Wilkinson, and they can give Memorial some fits.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and let's go ahead and move on to looking ahead to next week. What game really jumps out at you? We had our top 10 games in the paper on Monday. Is there a particular game that is exciting more than normal maybe this week?
I really like, you know, Carl Albert, Ardmore.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, Ardmore's playing really well.
Yeah.
And so is Carl Albert. And I think Johnny Vizel is the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
For them, he's playing in control, but he runs the ball well. He throws the ball really well, which is something Carl Albert doesn't do a ton of. But now, all of a sudden, they're throwing the ball.
Right.
Diego Richards plays now. He's healthy after being injured all preseason, and I think they're just turning into a really good team a lot faster than even Gary Rose thought.
Yeah, Yeah, they absolutely are.
And it's kind of it's been fun to watch. And I think that game, you know, obviously John Marshall Sulphur, you know, even Santa Fe Norman North intrigues me a little bit. Norman North's defense is really good, and mm-hmm. I've seen Santa Fe struggle on offense last week against Edmond North, so I kind of wonder how that's going to play into some things.
Right, exactly. So, you know, Gary Rose has been talking up Ardmore from week mm-hmm. one. He thinks that this is a really good team. Maybe I think he would probably I think he leans towards saying they're maybe the best team in the class. So, and I mean, obviously we got them right there, fourth in our rankings. So it's not like we don't think that they're really good too. So, but they've got a lot of talent. 5A overall is interesting. You know, week one, there were so many upsets and you know, rankings were just a jumbled mess. And then last week it kind of shook out a little bit more like you expected, other than McGinnis coming back and knocking off Kelly after the brutal week one that they had with all the injuries. But it mostly shook out the way that you expected. Guthrie, well, that was another upset. Maybe there were more upsets than I realized in 5A.
So, I started thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Guthrie surprised me the most.
Yeah, that might have surprised me more than any upset of the entire week. That might have been the biggest shocker that we saw all week, I think.
Now, granted, they didn't get to finish either.
Right, exactly.
You know, so we don't know what could have happened, but still, to them to be shut out by Ponca City,
right?
You know, at that point,
have played as long as they did and not scored any points was an upset in itself. So that was interesting. This John Marshall Sulphur game this Friday is one that I'm really intrigued by. I was there last year. It was on a Thursday mm-hmm. at Taft Stadium. It was like a week six or week seven non-district game when they just needed to fill a spot. And we didn't really know how good Sulphur was at the time. Like, I don't think anybody really did. You know, they had kind of hung with Davis earlier in the year and hadn't played a real tough schedule up until that point. And they came out and took a 19-7 lead on John Marshall, which everybody was thinking John Marshall was going to just roll over this team. And Sulphur comes out and kind of punches John Marshall in the mouth and has this 19-7 lead. And then injuries kind of start hitting them, and they were down to about their third string running back by the third quarter. And they were able to they weren't able to hang on. John Marshall scores 30 unanswered in the second half and puts it away. Then, of course, they meet back in the playoffs, and ultimately John Marshall loses when they go for two at the end of the game and don't get it on a highly debated mm-hmm. call on whether the guy was inbounds or not on a pass play. But, you know, it's a really interesting sort of I refer to it as maybe possibly a budding rivalry, if mm-hmm. Especially if they're going to keep this. I mean, obviously they're going to play again next year as part of the two-year deal if they keep this non-district thing going, which would be a lot of fun, I think. You know, maybe this could become one of those fun non-district rivalries that we get. That's not a natural rivalry, but it becomes a fun mm-hmm. A fun matchup to look forward to every year. You know, John Marshall is they're a pretty physical team too. I don't know if they're as physical as Sulphur, but they're close. I don't know if they're as physical across the board. They've got spots where they're more physical than Sulphur. But I don't know if they're as physical across the board as what Sulphur is. So I'll be really interested to see that. Devontae Lee, who is, you know, he's listed, I think, 5'10". He's probably closer to 5'9", but a legitimate 220 pounds.
Jeez.
He's got speed. He's got power. He is a really fun running back to watch. And he is—he definitely fits the bill as a physical running back. You know, he's had two really big games. Had a great game, went well over 200 yards against Heritage Hall in a loss, and then had I think around 150 yards on like 11 carries. They had a blowout win this week, mm-hmm. so we'll see. That'll be fun to keep an eye on, and then to see if John Marshall can take advantage of where they have more speed than Sulphur in some areas as well. So I'm really looking forward to that game this week. Is there a game under the radar that's out there that's maybe a really intriguing matchup? I've got a weird one in mind, which is what brings up the question.
You go ahead.
This is way 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 off the wall, but I'm really intrigued by Meeker at Okemah.
Really?
Yeah. It's like I said, I know that's a completely off the wall pick, but I'm curious to see what kind of team Meeker is going to be this year. They had a early loss to Prague, which is obviously a 3A team, and Meeker's in 2A, but I really thought that Meeker would be able to handle that. Okemah is playing well. They lost to Stroud early, but they're playing well here lately, and I'm really curious to see what direction that game is going to go. Last week was a weird week. I might have missed more games in the picks last week than I have in any single
really?
Week since I've been doing this. To give you an example, and you know, I generally miss about – I have about 350 misses a year. That's usually about pretty close to the number that I end up at the end of the year for my number of missed games for the entire season.
That's pretty impressive.
I don't know if it is or not, but that's the number. But through week zero, week one, and week two, I had missed 73 games total in those 3 weeks. And week zero was about half of a week. You know, there were about 80 games. Yeah, or through week zero and week one, I'd missed 73. Week two, I missed 59. And I really think that's probably the most I missed in a week. It was
wow.
It was a pretty crazy week. Week two is always every year is probably my worst week of the year, because you know, week one there are always some upsets you don't expect,
mm-hmm.
and then you kind of follow that trend off of what teams did in week one, and it turns out they weren't really that good. That was just a really big upset, but they're not really as good as you thought, and so you kind of adjust your picks based on what happened in week one when you really don't know anything about those teams, and then you realize that I was right about them the first time. It was just that was an upset. So week two is always tricky. So we'll see what I can do in week three.
I think I found a weird game.
What's your
or
weird?
Not a weird game. What would we call it? It's a
under the radar. Under the radar.
Weird's the wrong word.
Yeah, exactly.
Under the radar game. Piedmont at Noble.
That's very interesting.
Piedmont's shown a lot of improvement.
Yeah, they have.
From what I've seen from afar.
They have.
You know, they beat El Reno. They hung with Weatherford, lost by 7. And Noble has not really played a tough schedule yet. They've blown out some really soft opponents. And so I think this could be a first test for Noble and a chance for Piedmont to say, "Hey, we're getting better."
Right. If Piedmont can, especially if they can slow down the Noble offense at all, because that's a really talented offense. If they can slow down that offense at all, that will be a big statement for them. You know, they've got some talent on defense. I saw them in a preseason scrimmage against PC West, and they gave up a couple of big pass plays. But most teams are going to give up a couple of big pass plays against PC West with the receivers they've got.
Yeah.
So that'll be really interesting. I do think that the Piedmont's really improving. Yeah, if they can come out and have a good game against Noble, that'll be a big statement. And on the flip side, if Noble goes and you know, rolls up 50 points and a ton of yards and does that kind of stuff again, maybe we'll have a better idea of just how good this Noble team might be. So
yeah.
If Bear of Nobility is listening, he's a weekly visitor to the live chat.
Yeah, let's see if he listens to the podcast.
Hopefully he's subscribing to the podcast.
I'm not going to tweet out any Noble references. We'll see if
we
hear from
exactly.
him.
Exactly, yeah. We'll sneak it in.
Yeah.
Sneak it in. Let's see if he's actually paying attention. That's good. Because he needs to be subscribing.
He does.
He should be a subscriber,
he
just
does.
Like all of you should.
Exactly.
I'm assuming there's
iTunes.
More than one person out there.
I hope so.
Yeah. And we for our subscribers, we owe them an apology. There was some sort of technical difficulty,
and the
week two podcast didn't show up, which is unfortunate because we had a great interview with Gary Rose.
We really did.
Of Carl Albert, talked about a ton of stuff, including JT Realmuto, which was a lot of fun to talk to him about. So our apologies there, so subscribe. You know, follow us. We tweet it out every week. If you're too lazy to subscribe, we'll post it, and you can come find it. But if you want to advertise, this would be a great avenue for advertising right here. It goes
great over Bluetooth over your car stereo.
That's exactly right.
I listen to podcasts like that all the time.
Sounds fantastic.
You know, if you get the new iPhone this week, then you have to almost do that because you don't have any headphone jack anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, it works.
Yeah, Bluetooth is perfect for it, so it's great to do. So, all right, man. Well, based on the conversation, I think that probably means we're at the end of the podcast.
I think so. Yeah.
good stuff. We'll do it again next week. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to our producers. You know, yes. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm sure you do too. They always thank the producers.
They do.
Thanks to our producers.
Thanks, Paige. Paige is great.
Todd helps us out.
He's great too.
They do fantastic work. They have to sit here and listen to all of this and make it sound like we're not fools.
That's tough work.
So we appreciate them as well. So, but yeah, go subscribe. Check us out. We'll be back next week for week four. Talk about some fun week three games.
Yeah, we got non-district play ending.
That's right. Get back into the games that count for just about everybody. So it'll be fun. Catch us next week on the News OK Varsity Podcast.